Good afternoon, Jamie.
Hey, Keith. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, actually. Yeah, how about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm doing better. Side note, I think we need to change our intro music. I hate it. I hate it now. It needs to go.
Oh, you pick it then.
Oh.
You give me some music that we won't get sued for using, then, okay. And I will put it in there.
Okay, no guarantees, but okay.
Okay.
I'll make some music. I'll make some of my own music.
Oh boy, the originals. This is going to be fun. Hey. I'm not trying to be insulted. Do you have any musical?
None whatsoever. I literally just learned how to read music. So I
that's
I know,
a big step. A lot of musicians don't even know how to read.
It's from my daughter's big into like violin and stuff. So
That's fun. I played violin a little bit. Never made it to second position like a total boss, but you know, I can play like can for you.
Cool. So besides violining, what have you been up to?
It's been a while since we actually recorded one of these, and I actually have some notes. So, I usually don't prepare, but
I like the ones.
Yeah, so I've been working, you know, exclusively on what was at the time Pokédex, which is still like my internal code name for the application, but has been kind of rebranded to Juniper's Lab, which there's a long story behind that. Pokemon people will get it.
And you renamed it, right? Because there's already a Pokedex.
There was something that was going to release. It had a countdown timer. Pretty sure it never actually released like a week and a half ago. Here, let me check.
How did you come across that? Because maybe that doesn't even matter.
I didn't. Chris Winter did. He found it and he's like, so what about this? I think he probably accidentally typed in Pokedex.com. And, you know, because having a .com is better. I own Pokedex with an S.net. So it wasn't that great of a domain to own anyway. But they've had a countdown timer on this thing for like that has struck zero like a week and a half ago. So
I was hoping it went into negative. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome, actually.
Or NAN.
Yeah, just nan all over the place. that was the reason that we kind of rebranded. But then you looked and you found like a billion other things that all kind of had the same name. And it's an attractive name from a Pokemon player perspective because of the Pokédex, which is like an item.
Excuse
in
me?
The like with a D-E-X at the end of it. Right?
Gotcha.
Which
gotcha.
Is like the encyclopedia of Pokemon. And so that's why it's like, oh, you're like, we have Dex in card games. Excuse there's a Pokédex in the game. I know I'm not saying what you think I'm saying, but yeah. So that's why it was such a tantalizing name potentially. But yeah, there's just too much competition. And honestly, I looked at other popular sites and there's a lot of them that like, they're just vaguely Pokemon esque names. Like they're pretty niche and people still get them and know where to go and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, I can come up with something different that's a little bit more unique and run from there. So rebranded, cool. Got a logo made. Have not actually put it into the site yet. It's just like a text-based logo with like a Pokeball in it. And it doesn't need to be anything fancy. I like the font used for it and stuff. I think it looks okay. And it was cheap. I didn't spend a bunch on it. I think I went on Fiverr and got like a $60 logo or something.
You got 12 of them, huh?
I think it was like three variations initially and then like however many revisions, which wasn't that many. And then I like made my own revisions with color and stuff. So did that as a thing. And then my big goal was to basically before the last time we were supposed to talk, which was like a week ago, I think I wanted to have more or less all of the features done besides deck building. And I am totally not there. I've been consistently working and doing stuff, but the things that I was working on took more time than expected. Specifically, I wanted to get search right. So if you just go and search for cards, I wanted the experience to be really good. And that led me down the path of creating autocomplete for search and having it be context aware and actually accessible in, you know, web accessibility terms of things. And it mixes Live View to like update the data in the DOM and then Alpine to like manage the user interaction and stuff like that. And it, I had to learn a ton about both of them in order to kind of make this whole thing work. And once it was finally done or mostly done, I need to kind of adjust some styles a little bit just to make it look a little nicer probably. But the functionality is actually pretty sweet. except for combo boxes don't work for crap on mobile devices, which is kind of a bummer. So I might need to hack something together.
Why did you have to introduce Alpine?
Alpine's there for things that need to happen in the browser, but don't need to touch the server. So Alpine's how I do like my dropdown menus and stuff like that. It's like the JavaScript library that I use. Cause it's like seven kilobytes or something like that. And yeah, it's super
easy.
It's the
jQuery. It's the 2020 jQuery.
Yeah. It's dope, dude. Like Alpine is really cool. I completely get behind putting in, cause it's like, oh, I need some functionality. Like if you just want to have a button that hides and shows a thing, it's like 20 characters that you type into your HTML and just bam, magic, it works. It's like not that bad at all. Bam. So yeah, Alpine was pretty sweet, but there it's not as componenty, if you will, as like something like a React or a Vue or something like that. So it's a little bit harder for people to share pre-built components. So there's literally no, like you can't find an Alpine JS accessible combo box component anywhere on the internet. And so
that seems like an opportunity. Yeah,
this is going to be a blog post. Like I'm totally going to put this thing together. It also pointed out, like I found some bugs or not bugs. They're lacking features in the thing that Alpine has that can kind of make it componentable. It has this concept of it basically works by annotating HTML in the same way that they do in Vue templates.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's you write the stuff directly in the HTML. But if you want to have more functionality on that, you would want to put it into JavaScript somewhere. So they add this thing called the X spread operator, and you can just give it like a keyword or not a keyword, like a name from your data on your overall component. And then it will spread out all the things. So you can say like, oh, X on, which is like how you do bindings for things. You can have a dictionary that expresses all of your bindings in one spot, instead of you having like 15 of those declarations on one div or whatever. So the problem with spread is it doesn't pass to you some of the like magic variables that you automatically get when you're working inside the just expressions that you use in Alpine, like the $L, which is like gives you access to the element, or the $event gives you access to the event itself. So you don't have access to those when you use spread. Like it doesn't pass it to the function that you're assigning for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And so like that actually was pulled into a pull request, but it hasn't been cut into a new release. And there's some, and that's just for the event, not for like the other magic variables. So there's still some more stuff that you have to do kind of in the HTML bit, which is a real bummer, because otherwise it would be like, take this chunk of HTML, this script tag, and X spread blah, blah on like the different things that need event handlers or whatnot. And then bam, it's just like magically easy to share.
Cool.
So I learned a lot, but it's not quite there. I'm still going to write a blog post or something about that, just because I thought it was really interesting and it was a big learning experience for me.
Nice. I'll talk a little bit about Alpine later as well.
Oh, okay, cool.
In an indirect way, but go ahead. I'll leave you in suspense.
Oh, yeah, cool. I appreciate it. So yeah, that led me off to extracting out search and stuff, because I wanted you to be able to search just your collection. And I might actually remove this as like a view in the application, because right now it's like you go to /cards and that's just like general search, and you can start owning cards. Like you can, once you're logged in and you have permissions to have a collection, you can start adding cards to your collection. And then I have a separate view that is like /collection that will give you stats on your collection. Like you have this many cards in your collection, this many rare things. Like eventually it'll tell you like, this is the estimated value of your entire collection. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. But then it also embeds the search stuff and the search results, but it only searches the things that you actually own.
Nice.
And so I extracted that out, which led me down the path of figuring out live view components, so that I can have like search, or I can have card search as a component that I can drop in two different live view pages. And then it has some like different context stuff in there. And then with inside the card search component, I have a card search bar, which is like just the search bar, and then the search results, which is just about presenting the search results. And it was important to extract out these components because I was running into issues where like I would update state and it would change state in things that didn't need to be changed because they weren't explicitly in a different like process. So there was a lot of learning to be done about live view stuff. And there's still some like weird things that sort of go on. Like if you have stateful components inside of stateful components in live view, you can run into some really weird things where it's like sending the message to what appears to be the wrong component. And so I figured that out by just don't have your top level component be stateful if it doesn't need to be. And that worked out fine, but it was real odd how that was all working out. Yeah, so that was another big thing for me. And then finally, I added usernames and implemented user profiles and finalized my continuous deployment actually yesterday morning, kind of on accident. And yeah, so that was good. And in doing that, I figured out that I had purge CSS set up real weird inside my thing. So I was nuking all of the CSS that I was deploying out to the site. So I had like 4 bytes of CSS on my site and just everything looked like crap.
It's fast.
Yeah, it's super fast. Fun fact, if you're using purge CSS, make sure you move your actual templates and JavaScript files into the container that is running it before you run your build process. Cause otherwise it'll be like, you're not using any classes. You're a genius. And yeah. And then it all sucks, but that took me like an hour and a half to figure out.
So. Have you been, do you have any users on this giving you feedback yet?
The only users giving me feedback right now are Chris and Levi at the moment. I have some other people who want me to let them in there, but I was trying to figure out, and actually this is another thing I worked on. I needed to figure out displaying card information. Besides just showing you the card, I want to show you like I have all the text information and like all the other stuff like as actual searchable text. And so I had to figure out what's the best way to display this before I wanted to get somebody in there. So I'm actually in the process, like today, I'm probably going to reach out to those people and have them come in and check out what's there, even though it's like, I'll be honest with me, like some of the stuff's a little bit busted.
Sure.
But you know, come take a look, give me some feedback.
I think you're at the point where I would do that ASAP. Mm-hmm. Two things came to mind. One, I would get this in front of more users, no matter like the extra stuff that you said. I think it's fine, the extra search information. And then two, I would suggest, since you're doing usernames, you could do maybe sort of a invite type of if you want to go down that route where
do the sign up to get your username before it actually launches business. Yeah, I think that would be totally worthwhile to do. I mean, I assume so. This has a very pretty large free tier component, right? Because card search is always going to be free. I want to have public deck building be free also. So the problem I have there is like, who signs up to like reserve their username or whatever? Do I restrict that to people who like would go for a paying plan, or do I just be like, hey, I'm not launching yet, but if you want to sign up for your username, go ahead.
That's what I was just thinking when you were saying that. I wonder if I wonder if, yeah, you can choose your username if you pay for it. Otherwise you get a username assigned to you, like, you know, PandaBear127 or something. You know what I mean? Like, I think because there might be people that want to use it for free just to keep track of their own collections.
Well, the collections is behind the lowest tier for me. Like, actually, it's basically like I wanted to. Here's my pricing model for this, in a sense, not the actual prices themselves, but how I divided things up. I want free users to essentially not really cost me money. If it's like my thing. So I'm like, if somebody's like adding a gigantic collection, that's like, I'm going to have, you know, eventually the database grows if I have too many free users who are like storing thousands of cards in their collection, right? Like, yeah, that's just the nature of the beast.
The cost of members to you is not, you know,
yeah,
a couple hundred rows. It's the support.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's true too. But.
And the more features you allow a free person to get to, you know, the more trouble they may have with support. And so the more they're going to support you.
Yeah, that's a good call. I hadn't actually viewed it that way, but I was like, collection stuff, like that's pretty, pretty basic. Like actually, you know, collections are already built, right? That's already a thing that I have, but I'm like, that's something that people want. And the people who care about that are probably going to be willing to pay for it at least a little bit, because it's, you know, it makes it easier for them to search through stuff, right? Like, especially, when you think about the fact that like, if people have a lot of cards, just being able to know what cards you have without going and looking in the cardboard box that has 6,000 cards in it is, you know, pretty handy. I'm also adding the feature, I actually need to display it, but I want you to be able to make notes on cards in your collection so that you can be like, oh, I have 6 of this card. And then you can have a note that's like, I gave 4 to Jimmy for this last tournament. And so, you know, like, when you go and look at that card, you can be like, oh, I have 6 total, but like right now I only have 2 in my possession.
That might be interesting, like a tag, like tagging
on
stuff.
Loan or something.
Yeah. Because right. Exactly. You might want to know like, oh, these are cards that I want to sell. Right. So I'm going to tag these with like for sale.
Yeah. I think that's totally great too. Yeah. I want to have like a wish list for people so they can tag like, these are the cards I want to buy. And so that they can eventually go and see like, what would buy my buy list? If I bought every card that I wanted to buy, what would it cost right now at market prices or whatever?
Oh, that's cool. That'd be cool. And, even to segment that list too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they may have a tournament coming up and saying, oh, I want to buy these for this tournament or something. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm just totally making this up.
Well, that's how deck lists are working for me. Deck lists will look at your collection and you can say like, I need four of this card in this deck, but I only own three. And it will say like, hey, this is how much this deck would cost you to finish out.
Gotcha. What is a free user then get?
A free user gets access to card search. And then they get access to public deck building, probably is going to be my guess.
I don't know. What's the difference between?
So the deck building side of things for this application works kind of like GitHub. Like GitHub's actually one of the like sort of models for how I want to do this, because there's like collaborators in a lot of situations where people are like spitballing what would go into a deck, what would they should take out, how does it play, those kind of things. And a lot of times people keep that stuff like super secret because you don't want people to know exactly what you're bringing to the table if you're playing competitively. So that would be private decks. Like private decks are paid for. They're not even on the cheapest paid for plan. They're on like the mid tier paid for plan.
Okay. I like it. In that case, I would definitely I think usernames would be important then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think usernames are important too.
Yeah. I think the ability to reserve your own username would be a pretty enticing feature for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I would think about putting that behind some sort of paywall, because then you could even get people to prepay for their usernames while you're building the site.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Well, so the only thing I don't know about that is like, do I lock it to a plan? Like you get custom usernames if you are on the minimum of like the entry level plan, the collector plan or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you just don't have custom usernames otherwise. That seems weird.
Yeah, but like they're just links, right? So if somebody really doesn't care about that, you know, you go to laughingsquid.net / pandabear124, and they can just pass that around. They might not care, you know?
Okay. I think I can kind of get behind this.
Yeah, just give it a thought.
I'm going to have to go and check and see if I can find any place that does this. Like where it has a free tier, but the free tier members don't get to customize their username. Because I can even see how it would work out because it's basically at that point, it becomes part of the edit profile page. And then it's just grayed out, right? Like it gives you Panda Bear 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then there's just like a thing, like a help box there. It's like, oh, if you want to customize this, then actually become a paid member.
Yeah. And plus I wouldn't look at most companies that have usernames are free ad based supported.
That's true. Yeah. And one of my big things for this is I don't want to display ads. I never want this thing to have ads on it.
Dude, no, because then users' data is what you're selling. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not even using Google Analytics on this thing. I'm using Plausible, which is doesn't use any user information.
It's
actually, local to them, doesn't share it to anybody else.
Yeah.
It's that GDPR compliant and whatnot. Yeah. So,
cool.
So yeah, but that kind of brings me to where I'm at with this thing right now. My goal was to release on August 1st. Is it possible? Yes. Am I going to have to nearly kill myself to make it happen? Yeah, that would be. But so if I miss it by a little bit, but the quality is where I want it to be, then I think I'm totally okay with that. But
What if your goal was to release a landing page that describes, what you're building, has the ability for people to sign up with the usernames and pay you?
Yeah. I think I might go down that path because there's still quite a few things that I need to kind of set up. And I mean, let's see here. We got, when is August 1st? Is that next Saturday?
And the fact that you're not done gives you a chance to feed these early adopters more and more information and get them excited about it.
Yeah. That means that I have to create the marketing stuff too.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a bummer.
That's always my.
Yeah.
Downfall.
Okay. Yeah, I like where this is going. I'm gonna have to jot this stuff down. Nice. Speaking of which, I know I've been going literally for 20 minutes.
Yeah, we're gonna have a longie today. So if you want to pause, go to the fridge, maybe watch a show, and then come back, it's perfectly fine. We'll be here.
The last two tidbits. These are almost gonna be like my my suggestions for the week or whatever, or if we were one of those podcasts that did picks. Mine would be the bullet journal method, and which is something that I've started doing. And did you know that Cal Newport released a book last year?
Yes, and I bought it for my daughter. I almost built a bullet journaling app, right? You know, I worked on that for like 3 months.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah. I was really into bullet journaling as well. And I wanted to take that same experience digital, which would be basically a way. And Cal Newport. Oh, I thought you were talking about Ryder Carroll, who made a.
No, yeah. Yeah. So I read that book too. But yeah. Did you know that Cal Newport released a book last year called Digital Minimalism?
Oh, it released. I knew he was working on it. Oh, that's cool.
So apparently, yeah. Oh, so I bought that book. I haven't started reading it yet. But basically, I noticed that I was like being super down on things. And so I just kind of disconnected for a little while. And I was like, oh, I've had the bullet journal method like sitting around for a minute. Let me read it and actually figure out how the system works. And yeah, dude, it's awesome. Being disconnected from stuff and using analog inputs and whatnot. It's
been I got a pick around that as well. But man, we're like two peas in a pod right now. All right.
Okay. So those are my last two things. But yeah, I'm going to take notes on the stuff that we talked about, but you can get into your day or not day. You're like last.
So no, I'm interested actually in talking about the bullet journal a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Why did you go that route instead of, you know, the 14 million task managers that are out there? I mean, I know bullet journaling is more than just task management. Are you using it for more than this task management?
So I'm using it for task management, some goal stuff like exercising and some other projects and whatnot that I'm using for what else? I'm using it for my podcast notes. Like it's literally what I wrote my notes in before we started recording this. I honestly don't remember why I picked it up as a thing, but at one point I was like, you know, I need to be a little bit more organized. I used to be more organized than I am right now. And I kind of hate just using like the GTD method. Mm-hmm. And cause it's always like in an app somewhere. And I was getting to the point where I was really sick of messing with apps and I was running into a bunch of problems with things. So yeah, I was like, I'll give this thing a shot. I read, you know, basically anything that might potentially make me a little bit better at what I'm doing, or maybe a little bit more organized. And then the digital minimalism thing, there was like a rebroadcast of an Art of Manliness podcast where he interviewed him last year, and 2019 was kind of a whirlwind for me. So I totally missed it. And I'm like, Cal Newport's probably my favorite author, or like one of the biggest, had the biggest impact on me. Mm-hmm, author. Mm-hmm. Like So Good They Can't Ignore You is one of my favorite books and kind of really influenced how I looked at things and like the things that I was going to approach in my career. And then obviously Deep Work was there to really make me think about like, okay, what does it really look like to be focused and working on those things?
Cool. Yeah. I'm going to have to check that book out as well. I didn't know it was released. I knew he was working on it, but I didn't know it was released. That's awesome. My turn.
Yep. Go for it.
Okay, so if you remember last time we recorded, I think was like a month ago, maybe. We missed one in between. Yeah, you may have not noticed because we had two in the tank. But anyway, we skipped the last time. Last time we talked, though, I was really down. I was really confused about what I was going to do and where Chronic was at and State of the World and stuff. Mm-hmm. So. I did a few things. One thing I did is I got off Twitter again. Nice. I'm back on it now, but I think with Twitter, I need to separate. The reason I go to Twitter, the reason I'm addicted to Twitter is for two reasons. One, to know what the hell's going on. And I don't need to know everybody that I follow's opinion about what is going on. I agree with most of it. Most of it's my opinion that I share. Mm-hmm. But every time I see that opinion about something terrible that has happened, I'm just concentrating on the thing that's terrible about happened. And then when I see people in real life, I'm like, why is nobody just running around with their head on fire about so-and-so, right?
Yeah.
And so I need a way, and I'm also use Twitter to follow the new stuff that happens in tech, right? I mean, we're in one of the only industries in the world where we can wake up in the morning and Google Maps comes out and it changes the whole direction of how people develop for the web, right? Mm-hmm. And that happens all the time in our industry.
Or like, hey, com, you know?
Exactly. Like,
that's a very relevant situation right there.
Right. And like in that situation, I wouldn't have got the username I wanted, you know, probably if I didn't know that Hey existed. Right. You know, just stuff like that, that I want to keep in hand. So I think I'm going to start using lists a little more. I don't use lists at all.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, hey, when I'm in the mood for political Twitter, I want to go to my political Twitter list. Right. Mm-hmm. And when I'm in the new mood for technical Twitter, all that stuff.
Gotcha. Can you add filters to lists? Like a lot of tech people are pretty political too.
Yes, I know. That's one thing I don't know. Cause there's people I want. Yeah. I don't know how to handle that yet. Mm-hmm. Also there's people that give their opinions that I value that I don't want to unfollow and put into a list, you know? So there's some things to work out there. So that's one thing that's how I'm going to go forward moving with Twitter. I haven't done that yet, but cause I've kind of still been off of it for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I did, took my Super 73, with my iPad, went to the park and figured out took my friend went with me, Mary Jane, and we figured out together, me and her, what we can do going forward.
Nice.
And, so I have a plan. I have a 3-point brilliant plan.
I really hope that the third part is profit.
Oh, dude. Well, I wrote a blog post about it. It's up. I released it right before this podcast.
Oh,
I'll link it in the show notes. But I needed a blog post mostly is for me to kind of remember the reasoning of what I'm going to do. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pause development work on Chronic.
Okay.
Kind of. So the problem with Chronic is it's a lot of work, right? And that's part of my overwhelming feeling is it's a lot of work and I haven't released anything. And when you don't release anything for a long time, like 2 years, you grow apart from it, you know? And which I think is part of the reason why you left, to be honest. You know, we didn't really ship anything, right? We didn't get that adrenaline rush of shipping stuff, getting feedback, getting us motivation to work on it.
Yeah, that could have definitely played a factor for me because mine was really just like my motivation to work on the project died.
And the other big problem is the reason I can't just say, I'm going to release it now and continue working on it is I don't have a clear marketing message. Mm-hmm. The problem with Chronic is there's 468,000 Pomodoro timers in the App Store and another 6 million gadgets that you can get for Pomodoro.
Yep.
And what that tells me is there's no sticking factor. The reason, if you ask anybody if they use the Pomodoro method, they're like, yeah, I tried it out, but you know, it didn't really stick with me, right? I have not figured out, and it sticks with me because I'm disciplined about it. I've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, you've been doing it for a very long time.
But I want people, I also track my time. I think that's a big factor as well. If I didn't track my time like you, I don't know if I would be using it as much as I would.
Fun fact for you, I actually came back to the Pomodoro technique this week.
And so it doesn't have a clear marketing message about how it's different, how this is going to be different. And honestly, it's not different. For example, I found myself using my Mac Pomodoro timer a lot more than Chronic on my phone.
Because it's on your Mac.
Because it's on my Mac. Right.
Which is another fun fact. Chronic started as a Mac app a long, long, long time ago.
It did. Yep, it did. And so I need to figure out how to help people stay on task with their focused work. Mm-hmm. And I haven't figured that out yet. I have some ideas, which I can talk about later. But actually, I will talk. One thing I think that is good is if you have your task that you're working on out in front of you. So you can look down and say, yes, this is the task I'm working on. And it's a constant reminder about what you're doing, why you're at your desk, you know, what this thing is that you carved out time. That's important. So besides it not being hidden behind some to-do manager or in a notebook, I think it's a good idea to have that task out right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And so I think that'll help you. And I think I have some ideas around that. Anyway, those factors, and along with, because there's so many Pomodoro techniques out or apps out there, the design of this app, the MVP of this design of the design of this app needs to be at a high bar, a really, really high bar.
Mm-hmm. That is very true. Yeah. You can't just launch something kind of half baked.
You can't, this, you can't
unless anymore. You have, unless your design implements something that is so radical from what people are used to seeing.
Yeah.
Then in that situation, I think it could be a little bit semi half baked. But it would have to be such a departure from what they're used to seeing that they would be like, oh, this is something brand new, right? At that point, you're not even competing with Pomodoro Technique stuff.
Right. And so the design also was going downhill for me, and it wasn't as made it as fun as to use. And so I made a realization that the partner, you know, I talked about needing a partner on this application because it's so ambitious. The partner that I need needs to be a design-focused person.
Gotcha.
And so that's where I'm going to put some effort over the next several months to do this with Chronic, to nail down the marketing message, find a partner, a design partner, and start working with them and figuring out the basics of what this application is. Kind of not starting over, taking what I've learned and modifying that and making it more useful, so that people are drawn into using this method of working.
Okay. Yeah. It seems like now you're going at it with a focus. I think before we were like, I think this would be useful. And now you're like, well, obviously these things are useful because there are a billion of them out there, but they can't be so useful if there needed to be a billion of them. Like you're trying to approach it from almost like, it sounds kind of in a way that you're less interested in creating a Pomodoro timer and you're more interested, which was never the goal, admittedly, of Chronic in its current iteration. Originally it was like back when I created a Mac app in like 2010, but you're kind of trying to hash out your own method is kind of what it sounds like. Like you're like, okay, cool. I can take inspiration from here and here and here and bring them back together. Like the idea of having your task front and center is very much like a mindfulness practice, right?
Yep.
Like you need to bring yourself back to whatever the idea is that you're currently trying to work on. And you think if you can hone in on the fact that this is a problem for people, how can I actually bring that up so that people can stay focused on their work? Yeah, it does sound like you're creating something that's bigger than just an app and it's going to be focused more on like a whole methodology sort of thing.
Yes. And it's going to take a lot more experimentation to find out where that is. Like an example, like something I thought about for like having the task right in front of you is having the UI show you your task. But then I thought about, well, what if you signed up for, you paid for a year of Chronic, you also got an iPhone holder that we designed and sat on your desk and you could put your iPhone right into it. And maybe it could use some of the new app stuff to just kind of integrate with a stand. And then now you have a stand showing you your task right in front of you at your desk, right? Mm-hmm. So I've just been kind of thinking outside the box about how I can make that happen. So that's what I'm also going to do. I'm going to be thinking about this, working on this. But my first goal is to kind of find a design partner. And I have some people in mind that I talked about in an earlier podcast. I have not approached them yet. So if they listen, that's what the future email is about. All right. So that's Chronic. So I'm going to pause development work on Chronic and kind of do more businessy marketing design work on Chronic.
Okay. Nice.
So that leads me to what I'm going to be doing. So I'm going to start with kind of the end, part three. So that's kind of the precursor. What I'm going to be part of Chronic, one of the features of Chronic that I was probably the most excited about was this feature called break time. I was calling it break time. And we talked about this before where like on your breaks, the thing that I do on my breaks is I'll go and I'll read Twitter, right? Or I'll watch a YouTube video that I have on one of my tabs, one of my 1,000 tabs on my desk that I wanted to watch, or I'll read Reddit or sometimes I don't do this, but I want to go work out, right? So I want like a prompt to tell me, hey, do these exercises, right? Mm-hmm. And all these hook into these different services, right? I'll hook into Twitter or YouTube, whatever workout app that will send you workouts, stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. And my idea was that could be a separate product. That could be a product that I could sell after I build it into Chronic. So I thought, okay, what if I flip that around, make break time? So I'm kind of sort of still working on Chronic, right? Mm-hmm. And then I could, while I'm building it, I could think about how this is going to integrate into Chronic and maybe other apps and build that API and stuff like that. So that's what I'm going to work on. I'm going to work on break time.
Okay. So what's break time going to look like?
Ah, glad you asked.
Like, how are you packaging break time? That's my...
Break time initially will be a Slack application.
Oh, okay. So that you can be in Slack. Small thing that you can start with that you have an insane amount of expertise in. So that makes sense.
There you go. And I can eventually see, you know, not tied to your desk, right? So you want an iPhone app or something like that, which I could do eventually, maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not thinking that far ahead on break time. So break time, I'll start out with a Slack app. Because like you said, I have a lot of expertise. That's what I'm doing with my clients right now. I'm going to be building a Elixir Slack bot open source library, which I'm going to talk about that next. And so all these things kind of fit together, right? They're all kind of relying on each other. And the other cool thing with break time, it's I checked Slack. Like, there's nothing like this application. So it doesn't suffer from the same issues that Chronic suffers from. It's unique. Mm-hmm. I don't need to differentiate it from a bunch of other apps. And the idea that the other thing that if this is a Slack app, the one thing I get with Tattsu, which is also a Slack app, is I get constant signups, right? There's a constant funnel of people because it's on somebody else's marketplace. So I don't really need to do any marketing. I should be doing marketing to gain traction, but I don't. But you don't need to do as much, right?
Yeah, being on somebody else's marketplace is nice. And Slack doesn't like take a cut either.
No, like, Slack doesn't have any payment system. It's basically just a web page that filters in Slack apps.
Yeah, which totally works out for you. Also, you get the benefit of this being like basically a B2B product by being in Slack stuff, right?
Right, but but it is an individual thing, which also makes it unique on Slack. To be honest, like, there's not a lot of like products for the individual on Slack.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, because this sort of strikes me as, well, you can't just have an individual pay for it, can you?
Yeah. You can do whatever you want in terms of the payment.
Oh. So, like, say my employer signs up for break time, then like, it's basically becomes multi-tenant in a way, right? Because my usage of break time would be disconnected from my employer's payment, essentially.
As long as you have access to install apps on your Slack instance, you can have it. But you could also sign up for your own Slack instance if you really want.
Gotcha. Right? So I think that'll be your hurdle.
Yeah. That's a good point. I never
basically
really
create a Slack team for themselves so that they can run this app. Because otherwise it needs to be the organization pays for it and the organization has users.
Yes. But again, the organization does not need to pay for it. Right. That there's nothing tying an individual from installing their own app on some other website.
Oh, right? Really? Like, I can go and install my own Slack app into a different organization?
Yep. Yep. As long as your organization doesn't have the filter of there's a way for organizations to say, no, actually, we only have the ability to say yes or no to apps that people want to have installed.
Okay. And then you can tie it to the user.
Like, if you want to use Tattsu just for yourself to kind of, this is what I use it for, just to kind of say what I've done as a journal type of thing, you could totally do that. You can just install Tattsu yourself, right? And you could pay for the $1 a month yourself.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, Tattsu works off of channels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you just set it to be my direct channel or whatever?
Yep. 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 Okay. You can do it. Yeah, you can do it actually with a bot now, right? With a bot, which is how break time will work as well.
Okay. Yeah, I just think my confusion is comes from like it's been a very, very long time since I messed with Slack. It's changed quite a lot.
It has. They're also actually coming out with ways to make it more individual as well. But
gotcha. I think I sort of want it to be. Do you ever use Discord?
Yes.
Yeah, like I think Discord does this well in the sense that like your user kind of exists outside of workspaces, like you, or it exists outside of servers, right? Because like my user, can be on a part of like multiple different servers, but I can also have like direct, just like friends in Discord.
Yep.
And that allows me to have, you know, I can have a friend that's just a bot, presumably. I don't know how it works with installing extensions, but like that separation between individual and the actual Slack or the workspace is something that Slack could benefit from greatly, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Slack doesn't have the idea of a single sign on, right?
No.
Each individual. They try to have hacks to make it easier along the way. But yeah, you basically have, if you have 10 Slacks, right, you have 10 accounts. We're in Discord, you have one account with So that's break time. Also the other thing that break time doesn't need a lot of is design, right? Because it's a Slack app, the design of a conversational UI is the copy, right?
True.
It's not the pretty pictures. So that's also a benefit.
Nice.
So that's the second phase. The third point, the thing that I need to have created to help me make break time is, I don't need it, but I want it to exist and I want it to be built, is Juve. So Juve is a open source application. It's an Elixir application. It's partly out there now on GitHub. And I need to expand this to make it work with break time. And what Juve is going to be is basically an MVC framework for chatbots. So just as you would make routes, controllers, and views for web applications, Juve will work that way with chat ops, chat applications.
Nice.
I've already built this in Ruby, so I already know that it can exist, and I already know the extreme advantages that gives you. Like the ability to...
You mean the MVC advantages or the advantages you'll gain from moving to Elixir?
The advantages, the MVC advantages.
Okay, gotcha.
The way that I have helped my client move super fast, like when Slack comes out with all these new features, we're able to, with just minimal amount of work, plug that right into the MVC system. And it's actually mind-blowing how transformative it has been. Like, I'm not going to toot my own horn, but I'm tooting my own horn in the fact that, like, this really, really helps. Like, I've seen it in an application that has hundreds of thousands of users, and it works very well.
Okay, so here's the devil's advocate coming in here. If you already have this innovative solution, why don't you just use that to build break time?
Well, I built it for my client.
Oh, you don't own it. Gotcha.
So I don't really own it. I could talk to him and say, hey, I would really like to open source this. And they would probably be open to it, but it's still Ruby. And there's lots of issues with that. Like Tatsu is in Ruby, and there's a lot of support issues with being in Ruby or JavaScript, things like that. Like, I don't know why everybody builds their shit in Node for chatbots. In fact, and including Slack's official like library is in Node. It's it's crazy. But
because JavaScript is the most popular programming language in the world.
Yes.
And Stockholm syndrome is a thing.
Right. But as I talked many times before, Elixir is the perfect language.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's made for communications, right? Like, this is exactly what Erlang was built for.
A large percentage of the world's messaging system goes through Elixir's Erlang servers. So,
I think it's like 96.
Yeah, there
could be. I don't know.
I don't know what the percentage is because I would.
It's an insane thing because it's like basically all routing inside of data centers is done through Erlang.
Yes. And so just the fact that you can deploy without chatbots going down is a huge advantage, right?
Yep.
So the fact that Juve is unique, I think, nobody that I know, and I know a lot of people inside the conversational UI arena, nobody's talking about MVC applications for chatbots. Mm-hmm. Nobody's talking about Elixir, using Elixir. So I see Juve getting pretty big because it's unique. Like I could see it like a Nerves-like type of thing, hopefully, if I can do it right. Right?
Yeah, that'd be sweet. I mean, so Elixir does have this magical thing where a lot of really interesting libraries come up and then they're popular purely on their own. And then that sort of brings people to Elixir in a way, right? Like, you know, nobody wants to, everybody will be like, Phoenix is not just Rails for Elixir. And it's really not. Like Phoenix is baller in so many different ways, but it like builds on the concepts that made Rails such a powerful killer app for Ruby. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And Nerves is a similar thing, is it's like, hey, I think Elixir is pretty cool. What if I have this like amazing thing on top of it for IoT and, you know, using it for neural networking and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many cool things like that.
The Elixir community has a way of like what you just described of taking these things that have been in all these other communities and just making them for Elixir. But the process of making them for Elixir brings out all these unique capabilities, whether it's capabilities or attributes, mm-hmm. you know, like just think of like Broadway, right? That's not a new idea of like,
no,
of moving messages around, but Broadway does it in such a clean and nice fashion that it's mm-hmm. like, you know, and so I think the fact that I can talk about this, I know Slack, I know people in the bot space a lot, and the fact that this is an Elixir, and I just think there's a lot of value to this library,
mm-hmm.
Because I also want to make the library just kind of a black box and have you, if you want to write your chatbot in JavaScript or in Ruby or whatever, go ahead, and this little black box will be over here to process everything.
Oh, okay. So you almost want it to be like the an ingress layer in a way to your stuff. Like it's like, how about I handle messaging Slack?
Exactly.
And you tell me where to send the information once I've unpacked it in a reasonable way.
Yeah. And I also want to build Juve not only for Slack, but also for Teams, Discord, SMS, things like that.
Nice.
And have it work. It's just all works at an MVC level. So.
Yep. One API to talk to basically any of the messaging frame. That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah. So I started thinking, okay, I can actually create revenue around Juve as well. It's open source. So I started looking at what would happen if this was a sponsorship model, a sponsorware mm-hmm. model that was made popular by the author of Alpine and Livewire, mm-hmm. Caleb, I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Yeah, I
don't know. Link will be in the show notes.
But yeah.
But he's kind of popularized this idea of open source where it's sponsorware, meaning you sign up to support the development of this through GitHub sponsors or through Patreon or whatever the way is that you want to give. And once it hits some goal, then that library becomes public. But in the meantime, the people that are sponsoring it can create issues. You know, they have influence on the product. I'm also going to, so I'm moving to that sponsorware idea. I've already created and been approved by GitHub. So now I'm on GitHub sponsors.
Nice.
Link will be in the description. And now I'm in the process of changing the repo over, make it sponsorware-able.
Okay.
So I'm going to do that. I'm going to market that. I'm going to create streams, videos, workshops around Juve and building bots.
Nice. This sounds like so up your alley. Like it's...
Yeah.
This sounds so like such a good thing for you to, going back to kind of the Cal Newport, like so good they can't ignore you concepts, right? Mm-hmm. Like one of the things in there is like, you don't follow your passion necessarily, follow the things that you're really freaking good at, right? Like, cause it'll give you a lot of what you want in the work that you're doing. And this sounds like exactly that.
It's also good that you're both passionate and good at it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'm passionate about chatbots are just fun as shit to build, man. They're just really fun. So yeah, that's my goal. So I'm also going to be building up kind of this video library of stuff. So Yeah, that's my plan.
Nice.
I didn't know if you had any thought. I mean, you've kind of been sharing your thoughts, which
yeah, I've been chiming in as we're going around, but it's funny as we get to like, you know, pillars 2 and 3 of this thing, I go, dude, you can take all the time you want to try to find somebody to be your design partner for.
Exactly. Crying. Exactly.
Because I'm like really thinking like, I'm almost like listening to what you're talking about with Juve stuff and with break time stuff and just how well that fits into your skill set and the things you enjoy doing and your ability to quickly iterate and ship on those sort of things.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, dude, just throw Chronic away for a while, right? Like, yeah, just chuck it.
And the other good thing is this also fits into Chronic too. Like, yeah, because of break time and because I want to make a Chronic Slack app that will also mm-hmm. use Juve. Yeah. So like, that's what I tried to create with my friend, Mary Jane, that we talked about, like, you know, how do all these things fit together? And so I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see how this goes. And like, I've really enjoyed listening to you talk about it. And if you want any help on the video front,
oh boy,
then
you're going to want to be careful about offering that help up.
I mean, I'll give you feedback and stuff. I'm not going to do your editing.
Yeah. Anything, okay. But, okay. Good.
yeah. No, I do my own editing. That's enough.
Yeah. Yeah, so one thing I'm doing around the editing stuff is I'm coming up with ideas in my head about videos, like just stupid videos I want to put out like on Twitter and stuff. It has nothing to do with programming. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of get my editing skills and all that stuff up.
Gotcha. Yeah, I will tell you, screencast stuff is so much easier to edit than video of any other kind.
So one of the things I got access to, which I can't install yet because I'm still on, I don't know, High Sierra. I'm not even on Catalina, or wait, I don't know. I'm not on the one they're about to release.
You're not on Big Sur.
I'm not on the one before the one they're about to release.
Oh, you're not on, whatever.
I think it's Catalina. Mojave. No, I'm on Mojave. I'm not on Catalina.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. All right. Cause it's no, Catalina need, wine mixer, right?
Yeah. Catalina wine mixer. I need to be on that to install. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about,
I think you shared something about it, but I didn't look into it.
Oh dude, it looks awesome. So I want to experiment with that as well. I'm also excited cause I want to show my wife, cause she's going to be doing a lot of, virtual teaching, it looks like, cause she's a teacher. So
yeah,
I could see her having a lot of fun with,
you're gonna have to put that in the show notes.
Yeah, I will put that in the show notes. Yeah. So that's my plan. What I've been doing in the past week and a half or so, and the reason it's taking me so long is because I'm so bad at this, but I needed a place, like a home, to talk about like Juve and show videos and do workshops and like, you know, blog about this. So I'm working on my my site already has a blog, but it has just like a simple, stupid one page thing. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm working on like adding like a project section and like a newer homepage. And
gotcha. So you're revamping like Brilliant Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Brilliant Fantastic.
Wait, did you recently revamp it or is it still?
When I left Kinship, I kind of just quickly, in one weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just kind of nuked it. But I, you know, I've been, converting stuff over to Tailwind and stuff. So that's pretty fun. So I've been using some Tailwind UI things. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Looking at Brilliant Fantastic, it does make me a little sad because that site, well, back when I had pictures of like me and you doing workshops and stuff on it,
you can send it to it.
It had some of the most hilarious, Gazoogle results. Because it translated every time you'd say passionate about, like we were passionate about test-driven development, it would translate it to horny for. And it made me laugh
horny for now
every time, dude.
I think that's better copy actually.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, my plan is to get brilliantfantastic.com up and running, convert Juve over to sponsorware. And what I'm going to do with that, as part of one of my first videos I'm going to make, is I want to make sponsorware type actions, GitHub actions. So an example would be if you sign up and you sponsor me, a GitHub action will run. Mm-hmm. That gives you automatic access to the private repo
for
Juve. Also, like if I hit my goal, it's going to, and I wish GitHub would build this in so you could have private branches and public branches in like a public repo. Mm-hmm. Would be awesome. But I think the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to have a private repo, like Juve private or something, and yeah. then a public repo that's just going to have like a README talking about sponsorware and how you can sponsor it.
Oh, okay.
And then, but once I hit my goal right now is 75 sponsors. That goal might change. I'm going to have a GitHub action that automatically forks the private repo over to the public one and makes it like a real live app.
Oh, nice.
So those two actions, I'm going to, you know, they're going to be free and open source so that other people that want to do sponsorware can use them as well.
Cool. Sounds pretty good. This is a fun episode. Obviously it's twice as long as our standard episode, so there's that, but this is well worth the wait, and the talk has been great. Also, I forgot to mention this, but Coder Journey's coming back.
Yes, I was going to talk because you said you're going to work part on Pokédex, and then part we never talked about what else you were going to work on, and I assumed it was Coder Journey, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, so Coder Journey's coming back. It's going to come back in August at some point, and I put out a poll on the YouTube channel, and then I linked to it from Twitter today, basically to see what people want to talk about. Yeah, so that's Coder Journey's going to be coming back, and I'll start with my first new series in 3 years in August. Ooh. So I'm very excited.
Do you know what's your first? You're waiting for the poll to.
I'm waiting for the poll to kind of flush some things out. Last time I checked it earlier today, it was kind of a tie between talking about GraphQL and some Elixir Phoenix and LiveView stuff.
Oh, I'm more interested in the Phoenix LiveView.
Yeah. So, if we go down the LiveView route, I'll be pretty stoked about that just because that's what I'm working in at the moment.
Exactly. Too. That I think makes more sense for you, right?
Yeah. GraphQL, I just think is pretty awesome. And so if I do end up covering that, it'll probably be a pretty short series, but it might be more conceptual, and because that's less like tied to a specific technology, right? Like GraphQL is just, it's a spec basically. Mm-hmm. So it's like everything that implements it should be implementing it roughly the same way. How you get to each thing looks a little different depending on the language, but yeah, that's something I myself will probably go and vote for Elixir and LiveView just because I think it'd be more fun. Do I think it's the best also, for like, popularity of the channel? Probably not. But
the other thing is like there's a ton of maybe as many Pomodoro apps. There's about probably just as many video casts about GraphQL.
Oh, that's not even worth worrying about in a way, right? Like this is one of those things about YouTube that you like. There's this idea that there's no scarcity on YouTube. That's what it comes down to in a way, right? Like I don't need to worry about like there being too many videos talking about GraphQL because somebody's going to like somebody else's voice, right? That's just always how it comes down. And my spin on something would be taken a little bit different, but I think LiveView, there is not a ton of content out there about it. And there are a lot of little pitfalls you can run into when you're working with it. And I've run into them and I think I would have a lot more experience just talking about it. So yeah, I'm hopeful that we go down that path too, but it's just nice to say that I'm going to be releasing some content out there pretty soon.
You're back. You're back, back, baby.
All right. Well, this has been the longest one ever. We just broke an hour. So I will talk to you in 2 weeks, man.
Peace.
Bye.